Nerds Network, where we talk about the movies and TV shows over the past 7 days. I'm Gregor Sprague, and joining me is my co-host Corey Scott, taking a little bit of a break from NaNoWriMo, and our very special guest, Matt Stein. Matt, how you doing?
Good. I thought Corey was doing Bananarama. I thought he was doing some guest spots at adult gentlemen clubs.
A cruel, cruel summer Bananarama, which I would rather be doing that than trying to write a book. If I could write a book about Bananarama, where they meet up with Till Tuesday, that would be fantastic.
I didn't realize Bananarama was something real. I just pictured you in a yellow Speedo shaking your moneymaker.
What do you mean just?
Whatever. Worse than my wife sometimes.
But no, so...
And better.
So Matt is, for those of you guys who do not know who Matt is the co-host along with Corey on Galactic Netcast Podcast of Terror, and he also co-hosts... Weird World Weekly, and is occasionally on Sci-Fi Geeks Club over there. So Matt, explain, because Corey does a good job, but explain to us what Podcast of Terror is, and then what Weird World Weekly is.
So basically, the Podcast of Terror, I've turned it into my personal playground as life revolves around horror, horror movies. We've done horror attractions. I was supposed to talk about some haunted houses, but they sucked, so I kind of just glanced over it. And we do news, horror video games. Basically anything in the genre, I've always been a huge fan, so Dave asked me to kind of put together a podcast and then forced Corey to be my co-host, and now we're picking up steam. It's getting pretty cool. Weird World Weekly is kind of in the same vein. The original tagline was like, weird shit in 15 minutes or less. It was just supposed to be a quick little podcast. Dave and I cover paranormal, conspiracy, mythological, or everything else that can be kind of weird, so that's a fun little short one where I still get to talk about scary shit in some fashion. And like you said, the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, it's a bunch of nerds who sit around and talk. And sometimes they talk about Doctor Who for like a half an hour. And then those are the episodes in which I want to just die. I want to go into a corner and die.
Yeah, so this week we're going to talk about the new Doctor Who episodes.
Which is why I won't be there.
This show. You just described was very much the same description of this show. Oh, it's a bunch of nerds sitting around talking about Doctor Who for a half hour. Yeah, that happens a lot, actually.
All right, quickly, Greg quickly edits the show notes here.
No Doctor Who.
But no. I've sort of backed off on Doctor Who because I'm saving that for my next guest, because I'm starting to plan ahead a little bit for some of these things. I have a British person coming on next week, so I'm just talking about.
Without even you saying Daryl's name, I assume that's who is next.
Yeah, Daryl is next. But let's not look ahead too far, because we got you guys, and I want to talk a little bit about news. Now, you guys covered this last on the last episode of Podcast of Terror, but sad news for horror movie fans and Texas Chainsaw Massacre fans, as the actor who played Leatherface, Gunnar Hansen, passed away at the age of 68. Sorry. Now, is I don't know too much about this because I don't, or too much about him because I've never seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I've never seen, I don't watch too many horror stuff. Although, if I think I like the campy stuff like Ash vs. Evil Dead, but so eulogize him or something.
Well, like, it's kind of weird, like. He wasn't like a Kane Hodder where he was, you know, Jason, and he kind of did a whole bunch of shit. He really just did kind of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and a bunch of other weird movies.
Yeah, so, he's not somebody that you recognize as himself. You recognize him in the roles that he's played more than anything. It's not like you see Robert Englund, and yeah, you think of Freddy Krueger, but you know Robert Englund as well because he's done so many things. He's become kind of famous outside of the role, but it still always kind of ties back to it. Unfortunately, as much as I like to say, you know, I feel bad that Gunnar passed away, of course, and he seemed like a cool guy, and he's certainly done a good amount of you know, more direct-to-DVD horror, but I can't say a lot about him other than the fact that he has a nice beard.
He has a pretty nice beard, but you know there was a shit ton of Jasons. You know, Kane Hodder is just the first one. You know, the same thing. There was a shit ton of Leatherfaces. Gunnar Hansen was just the first one. So it's kind of in that vein, he's important for that reason. He's kind of the icon. He is the original.
Yeah, it's not like like Robert Englund, where he's besides Jack Errol Haley, he's the one who's done Freddy Krueger. But yeah,
some would argue that he's the only one who's done Freddy Krueger.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. I like this, and I like hearing, not hearing that people pass away, but you know that people will remember him for these, and he's done a lot. He's done like 20 low budget and direct to video films, including one that I think might be a parody of Texas Chainsaw Massacre with Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers.
Yes, I saw that in his list. Yeah. I have never seen it, but now I kind of have to.
Yeah, I mean that. I think at the very least, I want to look at some of his other stuff and put it on the to-do list for Podcast of Terror. I think it would be nice to pay a little tribute that way, is to explore more of his work, because we didn't really know. The other thing is the fact that when Texas Chainsaw Massacre came out, it's one of those films that was, you know, very changing for the horror genre, for horror films. It stood out. It was something very new. So what he did playing Leatherface set what other films were going to emulate afterwards. And that's kind of a big deal. And I think that's a very good statement about who he was as an actor and what he accomplished, is that people think iconically of certain characters. They think of Jason, they think of Michael Myers and Freddy Krueger, and they think of Leatherface, absolutely. And Leatherface predates those other guys completely. And that's in a big part because of him.
Yeah. I mean, he's like, I've had this interest in horror movies. Like, I think what deterred it is I got the crap scared out of me when I was younger. So it's like, I want to be amused, not scared. So I've stayed away. But watching Cabin in the Woods, because Glenn going, hey, watch Cabin in the Woods, and then watching Ash versus Evil Dead because I really enjoyed the Sam Raimi Spider-Man's. And then Burn Notice with Bruce Campbell. I'm like, all right, I want to check this out. And this now makes me go, I sort of want to watch the original Evil Deads now. But I think it was the first episode. It's like, oh, I don't have to, because they just explained it.
Yeah.
They explain it, but it's not the same as seeing it.
Yeah.
No, I remember seeing the first Evil Dead movie and being mortified. Like, the original, not Evil Dead 2, which is the comedic remake of the first one. But the tree stabs the girl in the ankle with a pencil, and I remember just being mortified as a child.
Yeah.
And now
yeah.
I'm completely numb to everything, which is unfortunate, but my wife takes the brunt of it, so it's okay.
All right, that is an open-ended comment that I just...
Yeah, that's what I'm not going to touch, but instead I'm going to turn to the next news story, which I think this is a repeat of, like, what, this time last year?
I believe so.
With the Constantine fans launch a change.org petition to bring back Constantine onto a new network. Now, and they target specific networks, with the LRA network, CW, Netflix, Yahoo Screen, and the USA network as potential candidates. And the first thing I have to say is, let's keep this away from NBC as much as possible. So that would mean, I think, taking away USA Network and maybe LRA. I don't know what LRA is under in the grand scheme of networks. But in this,
I think NBC did a good job of taking it away from NBC.
Yeah.
Which means, yeah, if you're one of their sister networks, they could have already farmed this out to them. I don't know that they're jumping up and down. Oh, wait, now we realize that we made a mistake and we should have kept this on the air the whole time.
Yeah.
I'm just amazed that people took the time away to put in on change.org their little petition for this right before they went absolutely batshit crazy about Starbucks cups.
Okay, so how much do you know about change.org? Because this is starting to bug me. Because it seems like change.org started out as something good, but quickly became, let's just make a petition about anything.
You just described the internet.
Yeah, but, yeah. Sounds like Kickstarter, Indiegogo, MySpace, Facebook, pornography.
But no, yeah, I mean, I know it's not that far off, but like when you have, and I'm going to NITAC crowd under the bus, when you have a petition to where 100 signatures is all you need to have Justin Robert Young buy a beard for Martin Sargent when he's playing Santa, seems like, okay, it's a stupid platform to me.
It's not the platform that's stupid, it's the users. There's certain groups of people that just show up in mass and like to basically just fuck things up for everybody. And mm-hmm. and that's really it. I read a Tumblr, not Tumblr itself, but a story about users on Tumblr who basically went batshit and caused a girl to try to kill herself because they didn't like her fan art of Steven Universe. It was a whole article that was basically Steven Universe fans are the worst fans in all of existence because they're very non-inclusive, and they think it's because, oh, you can't draw a fat character thin because that's wrong, and you can't draw a character that that should be maybe identified as a different race except that she's red instead of what you're thinking she is. You can't draw her as another race. You can't have a white person play that part in cosplay. It's just stupid stuff. But the internet article itself is dumb because it's saying that this is representative of all the Steven Universe fans. Whereas Tumblr may be where a lot of these people lurk, but it doesn't mean Tumblr's bad. And it certainly doesn't mean Steven Universe is bad. It doesn't mean the change.org is bad. But there are people who just go overboard and think every single thing that they disagree with, they have the sense of entitlement that means we've got to tell people that this is wrong, even though it really shouldn't matter.
I agree with what Corey said. Change.org is not the problem. It's the people. Yeah. Kind of going back to Kickstarter. Kickstarter was this platform for creators to get their stuff to the masses and help get funding by way of pleading their case, essentially. Then Kickstarter bred the bastardized Indiegogo where they didn't care. They just wanted you to make money, so they got money. And I had this revelation when I'm from Sheboygan, Wisconsin. It has like 50,000 people. It's not a very big city. The music scene there is garbage, which is why I traveled outside. But there was a band who had like one guy who thought he was the shit. They had an Indiegogo to fund their new CD, and like their perks were like go out on a date with a member of the band. Like that right there is my definition of a problem.
Yeah.
Because now you're letting anybody, and I don't know if anyone watched The Simpsons this week, but there was case in point. Homer does the I can't remember what it was called, but it's essentially a GoFundMe or an Indiegogo for him to get a chair so he doesn't have to stand up anymore. The chair will stand him up. I'm like, that is a prime example of people taking something good and making it horrendous.
Yeah.
Not the chair, because the chair sounds awesome. And,
the chair does sound awesome.
I'll be starting my GoFundMe next week. There's actually a place in Sonoma County where I live that makes that chair.
I've seen them.
Yeah, it's like $4,000 if you pre-order it, or it's $6,000 when it finally goes on the market. It is a thing of beauty.
And now, don't get me wrong, all this being said, I do actually like this change.org petition, but like I feel like they're just going, okay, anyone pick it up. But I'm going to make a case for the CW, because with this past episode of Arrow called Haunted, which brought Constantine in there and brought his show into the Arrowverse continuity, because he gives a bunch of references to the season that they had. I'm looking for the statistic here, but they had an increase in ratings of, I think, 11% for this season. In the key demo is the other part. And so that tells me, okay, CW would have been a better fit. And Beatmaster is asking, you know, if this would be a little too close to the Supernatural TV show. I don't necessarily think so. Like, it will be in the... They're selling it that way, but is that a bad part? Is that a bad thing?
I mean, we are in a time where there have been, at times, three different CSIs or there are three different NCISs. Having a show that's similar to another show on the CW, a lot of shows on the CW are very similar to one another. Maybe not exactly the ones we watch, but now we're talking about having three superhero shows on this network anyways.
And which is Supergirl's already going to have three.
And Supergirl's over on CBS. I think what this shows really is that it improved things by people who were into Constantine, wanted to see the character, and they came over and they watched Arrow when maybe they hadn't done that before. And if there had been the crossover potential for Arrow to go over to the Constantine show, then that may have drawn more viewers over to it. So it seems to me that the shared universe aspect is really a bigger selling point than just where does the show come back to or where does the show go. And that's both good and bad. I mean, one, it makes it tougher to just watch a show and enjoy that show by itself. I'm finding that a little bit with Flash and Arrow lately and the new Legends of Tomorrow. But two, it does show that maybe these filmmakers and production companies controlling their properties more would be more beneficial to them than letting the networks control it. Because Constantine being on the CW, it was never going to get that opportunity to cross over. Supergirl being on CBS, even though it's a shared company, I mean, CBS owns the CW network, why are they not considering that for her?
Well, and a shared production company, too.
Right.
Not just shared company, but they're both owned by Greg Berlanti, Ali Adler, and Mark Guggenheim. They do all three of the shows. And so, yeah, it would make sense for that way. And where Constantine, I think, would still be, if they did Constantine with the same people, it would still be, or most of the same people, probably still be David S. Goyer and, Daniel Saran?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe this is something that I could see CBS reconsidering, saying, okay, we said that we weren't going to have these kind of crossovers, but now maybe we are, because obviously it is beneficial for the show. Not like it seems like Supergirl isn't doing fine for itself so far, but it's only two episodes in. As far as putting a Constantine petition together after the show's been off the air for so many months, and I think they did this before. They tried to do this before.
They did it right after. Like, there was the petition for it to go to the other ones, but the one that they were going for the most was Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
Because it did make more sense, you know, to stay with it, but there was them looking inside the NBC family. But, like, honestly, I would be really excited to see Matt Ryan be a recurring spot. Like, you bring Constantine to Arrow and Flash for certain episodes whenever there's something with the supernatural.
Him coming back would be great. That's the nice thing about a shared universe. Does that every character then need their own show? Not necessarily. It depends on if they can support it. What I'm more curious about is because of the fact that if they can get Constantine and if they consider doing another show, CBS just made that announcement of where they were going to start airing the Star Trek series on their own online network. And at the same time, the people who are running CW are saying possibly holding back on releasing seasons and episodes to things like Netflix because it's taking people off of their own system. Combining those two things makes me think, what if they do a Constantine show or more shows like this and they just do them to the CBS program instead of one of these channels that already exist? Because that's what they're going to be looking for now, is how do we get more content to put into these things? Oh, you're not crackling anymore. So if anything, I don't see CW filling up with another DC superhero show at this point. Certainly not one that just went off the air at another network. But if CBS/CW puts together a show that is more of a supernatural type show that includes Constantine, like they're talking about doing for the movie anyways, this may be what makes them do it, you know, and where they put it.
Yeah. So that's our news. And so we are going to go over to talk about some of the TV shows. starting with the first two episodes of Ash vs. Evil Dead. Now, this is a sequel to the original Evil Dead movies that starred Bruce Campbell. This also stars Bruce Campbell. I think Sam Raimi is credited as a creator and a producer. I know he's not showrunner on there because that's not who they have the interview with at the end. But this it premiered last week on Halloween, and we had the second episode. So this is where I open it up to the podcast terror hosts. I almost said horrors. I don't know why.
Probably not inaccurate.
Yeah, you're not that far off.
If you have not listened to our ads, we will sell anything.
Buy soap.
Hey, if soap's paying the bills, I'm selling soap.
All right, so
I will sell the Fight Club soap. I don't give a shit.
What do you guys think of this? Because I think you guys have also seen the source material here too.
I earlier mentioned the original Evil Dead scared the shit out of me. I actually have never seen Evil Dead 2 because I'm a lazy person, but I love Army of Darkness. It was a better fit for Bruce Campbell, in my opinion, and that caused me to take in more Bruce Campbell media. Some of his others, we were talking about Burn Notice earlier. I watched that simply because Bruce Campbell is in it. Mm-hmm. Bubba Hotep, yeah, which is a really good movie. My Name is Bruce, where he plays himself, but the movie is still based on every other movie he's ever been in, simply because I love Bruce Campbell as an actor. Typecast just to shit, but I don't care. Now, with this Ash vs. Evil Dead, I personally really like it because they did it justice. It's in the same vein as the Army of Darkness. It has that kitschy comedy to it, and Bruce Campbell still plays Ash the way he played it 10 years ago, but he plays him in a modern day. You know, like, they don't shy away from the fact that there was a gap, and now he's old and he's a little fatter, and it's funny.
Yeah, and Bruce Campbell plays Ash in the way that Adam West is Batman. I mean, it's impossible to separate the two of them now, and you don't want to. You want to believe that Bruce Campbell is Ash, and so he essentially played Ash on Burn Notice, and he wasn't very dissimilar from playing an old version of Ash in Bubba Hotep. He's going to be on Fargo, the TV series. I think this week is when he shows up. And I want to say that he's playing Ronald Reagan. The guy is just amazing in everything that he does and knows how to, we'll say, pander to his fan base, because I don't think he'd care. I think that that's exactly what he would do. If you've seen his Hungry Like the Wolf Old Spice commercials from a few years ago, it's fucking Bruce Campbell, man. I also like the show because, I mean, it is sort of a reunion with the Raimi look and feel. The creatures in it are almost precisely what you'd expect, maybe slightly updated, but very, very similar to what you've seen in the Evil Dead movies. The way the filming is done, the chasing the camera through the woods, all those classic things that you got from those films where they started are in this. And on top of that, you get Lucy Lawless is a series regular who was on Xena with Raimi, and Bruce Campbell was actually on that series as well. It all just adds up to being just a terrific half hour of TV every week that I couldn't be more excited about.
Yeah, I mean, I like this because, again, and I'm saying this again, I haven't seen any of the stuff before this in the Evil Dead universe, but I love the campiness to this, and I think this might even be me admitting the fact that I would probably like the sci-fi, like Sharknado stuff, because where it does look bad, like in some of the effects it looks bad, it's in this universe where it's like, okay, it looks good because it looks bad, sort of deal. Like with the in the opening the for the first episode, you got where he has the his chainsaw arm and he chops off the lady's head and you see the head go, and I'm like, that's an effect you'd see on Film Riot, like exactly how it's done in that quality of style. Not saying anything is that they're that Film Riot does bad quality, but they're not exactly Hollywood produce special effects artists yet either.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, though, is that a lot of these things that you've seen other people emulate throughout the years started with what Raimi was doing with Evil Dead. Just like we were talking about earlier with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, is that this is the starting point that people are like, oh, wow, yeah, this looks like this, this looks like this other thing. It's like what happened to John Carter, is that all these things have been copying Evil Dead for so long, and now Evil Dead comes back, and it looks like all these other things, but that's because it goes back to Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, definitely, and but I enjoyed it. I love the campiness, and this is, I think it was more seeing Bruce Campbell on Burn Notice when it wasn't even, I don't even know what drew me to Burn Notice. It was just like, oh, hey, I like Psych. Let's check out the other USA Network shows. Burn Notice, that's interesting. I actually am not, I'm enjoying this. Got a little lost at the end there, but, or like I felt like they overstayed their welcome a little bit, but whatever. And then here I'm like, yeah, this is really good. This is enjoyable with Ash vs. Evil Dead. And I'm excited for every Saturday night if I can watch it live, or Sunday afternoon when I get done doing my church stuff. And I was like, go home, watch Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Just got done worshiping God. Now I'm going to go home and watch something. It's basically worshiping the devil.
Yup. So... you guys going to continue watching?
Absolutely.
I have to. And not just philosophically, but also because my wife is more of an Evil Dead fan than I have ever been. You know, she had the DVD that looked like the Necronomicon with the skin and everything. She was always the one who was like, she's been the horror fan in my life since we met. And I'm just always excited when there are things like this that we can share together, especially stuff that we both like, because she likes some horror films that are not my favorites.
Yeah. So let's switch things over a little bit, and we'll talk about the League, because I feel like this is a good spot to catch up on. Like, I think we got, what, maybe four more episodes left of the League?
I wouldn't even go that far.
Like, I know they're really close to the end of all of the episodes, and this is one that I've enjoyed for a long time. I know me and Corey, we talked about it before, that that Corey doesn't he likes it, but he doesn't quite get all the football references, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yep. It's like having lunch with the people that I work with.
Yeah. And so Matt, give your general review of the League as a whole right now to catch everyone up.
See, we talked about this actually on the podcast, Terror 2. I like the League because of the comedy, and I actually do play fantasy football. But I don't like get into a room with a bunch of people that I play fantasy football with, and we don't shit-talk each other like this because everyone lives so far away. But I just like the interaction between the characters. I really like Andre because he's that aloof friend that everyone makes fun of, and he just doesn't get it. And they always go back to it, and he's very eccentric, and Taco. Taco is becoming, they kind of bastardize his character. Like, at first, he was just like that dirty pothead brother that didn't get what was really happening, and now they've played it up so far with all the EBDB, B&B stuff that it's kind of getting ridiculous, but
yeah.
I continue to watch it, and I really enjoy how relevant they stay with the actual goings on in football. Like the first episode of the new season with Marshawn Lynch on the beach, and you know, I'm just gonna run the beer over there. He goes, oh man, what could happen? I gotta throw it. And Kevin starts on fire. I like that. I like pop culture references, and they do a really good job of it. And with the exception of, you know, the guy who plays Kevin and his little mishap, I think it's a really respectable show.
Yeah, it's about the same thing, and then. I am blanking on this past episode. I do know that Taco had
the Yank Banker.
Oh yeah, where... yeah. It was the Yank Banker, but Taco had something with like EBDB, was it EBDB, BNB, FDIC, or whatever?
Yeah. And he was, shit, he ran in, Andre was doing surgery on that girl that he had a crush on, and he was, like, runs in, and Yank bankrupt?
Yeah.
Because he tells the girl he loves her while he's about to perform surgery on her.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what I'm talking about. Like, it was just the Eskimo Brothers was the first thing, and then it was, you know, the Eskimo Brothers database, and it was the Eskimo Brothers database bed and breakfast, and it was Eskimo Brothers Prime, and now it's Eskimo Brothers database FDIC, and I'm like, come on.
Yeah, like, that's the one thing I don't like about this season is they have done stuff for the sake of, oh, well, we need to give this reference. And the EBDB thing has been an overarching thing, but with Pete in the squatting in the bush because he's got to take a massive shit and then going, mm-hmm. Yo, Bagoya, it's one that's like, okay, really? Yeah, it's a funny line, but I could see they've added it in here because they're not going to be able to say Yo, Bagoya on a TV show any other time mm-hmm. once this is done. And it seems like every episode has had something where it's like, oh, here's the callback that just for the sake of a callback.
The show's it's so centered on pop culture references that they have to do stuff like that. I think that's why people watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't they supposed to end it soon?
Yeah, this is the last season.
Oh, this is the last season. Okay. Yeah, so there's 3 episodes left. December 2nd is the last episode, which I'm kind of happy about. Like, A, their ratings are complete shit. Like, they're getting less than 1 million viewers per episode now.
But they're also on FXX, which is like a fourth or fifth tier cable network?
I don't know. We have UVerse, so it was the U200.
Yeah.
So, it's up there, but even when it was on FX, it wasn't doing great.
Yeah, but it was paired with Always Sunny.
Always Sunny moved to FXX too, so I feel like that's what FX did to get people to watch their second-rate channel.
Like they did, yeah, they did that with their, admittedly, probably their 2 most popular shows.
But now FXX plays, and I love The Simpsons, but they play The Simpsons like a couple hours a day, which I literally just got rid of that channel tier, but if there was nothing on TV, I would flip on FXX because The Simpsons were on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we've talked about the FX move before. But the thing about the league is that it took Always Sunny a few tries to get a show to pair with it. There was a show called Testies that my wife and I really liked. That was 2 guys that went and had experiments done on them week after week to pay the bills. And it was a funny show, but did not catch on with viewers. There have been a couple of different things, and the league was the one that actually stuck. And taking it away from Always Sunny is a way that they're trying to grow the network by saying, okay, now if you watch the league now, here's a show that we think you'll probably like, which is You're the Worst, or here's Married, and here are these other shows. They're trying to spread things out, but maybe it was better to leave it with Always Sunny because it was a good pairing, and you need to keep a strong base as opposed to splitting things up that rely on each other for viewers.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
All right, so wasn't Sunny supposed to stop too? They were supposed to end after like this 8th season, and then they changed their minds?
I think the thing about Sunny is that they just decide, because the people who are the stars of the show also make the show, I think they just kind of decide when we feel like we've got a good enough season together, then we'll do it. And that's why it's so far between seasons of that show.
Yeah.
But especially once they started getting the syndication out of it by playing on FX during the daytime and Comedy Central and things, it turned out pretty good for them because it was a quiet hit. It was one of those cult shows. And to see them get the success that I think they deserve is nice to see.
No, yeah, and they do have 2 more seasons up. It's renewed for an 11th and a 12th season, and the 11th will be the one that premieres in January.
Yep.
Even though you're seeing it advertised now on FXX.
I've been watching previews for Star Wars for a year, so
yeah.
not impressed.
But no, yeah, so all in all, I'm loving the league. Gonna continue watching the league. Now we're gonna go to starts and stops. Show where I tell you what's coming up in the next week. Starting on Tuesday, you have at 8 p.m. on Esquire, the fourth season premiere of Knife Fight. And then also, and 10 p.m. also on Esquire is the series premiere of Uncorked, where it's basically America's top sommelier or something like that. 10:30 on USA Network is the series premiere of Donnie. It's the Donnie Deutsch scripted comedy. 9 p.m. on Wednesday over at Discovery Channel, you have the fourth season premiere of Alaskan Bush People. 10 p.m. on Esquire, you have the second season premiere of Going Deep with David Reese.
Those both sound like euphemisms.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of these, a lot of the ones that I don't ever mention, like the stuff on Investigation Discovery, are 9 times out of 10 euphemisms for something.
It happens.
You got to get the Bush People somewhere because it seems like Rupert Murdoch just killed National Geographic. So,
did not know anything about that. but yeah. So Thursday, November 12th at 9 p.m. on VH1 is their 2-hour special presentation. VH1 Big in Music, You Ought to Know. It's a concert. They're playing a concert basically. 10:30 on CBS is the fifth season premiere of Two Broke Girls. And at 11 p.m. on Sci-Fi, you have the special presentation, The Hunger Games, The Phenomenon. On Friday at 3:01 a.m. on Netflix is the series premiere of With Bob and David. Yes. I'm looking forward to that show.
And then basically, I don't know if you've ever seen Mr. Show.
I've seen Brian play on like the pre and post shows on Night Attack. Like I've seen the C.S. Lewis Jr. sketch that they've done, I think, a couple times, but the one Brian always plays in there. And so I enjoyed Mr. Show.
Yeah, I mean, it's Bob Odenkirk and David Cross. They're excellent in everything that they do, but especially paired up, it's going to be wonderful.
Yeah, and also this surprised the crap out of me, especially with how they ended it, but David Cross is doing another season of Todd Margaret. Like, they're advertising it on IFC, and I'm like, you ended it with him in Korea! How the hell are you going to get him back? What are you, like... Because I thought, okay, it's done, it's over, he's doing something, he's moving on. Nope, come back. But also at 3:01 on Netflix is the special presentation, John Mulaney, The Comeback Kid. And no, it's not a sitcom, it's just a stand-up special. At 10:30 p.m. on Food Network is the first season finale of Barbecue Blitz. And then on Saturday, just for Corey, at 9 p.m., on FYI is the third season premiere of Tiny House Hunting. Matt, has Corey told you about his tiny house addiction?
No.
He loves Tiny House, the Tiny House shows.
Like the small people shows or the...
No.
Like the houses that are the size of the room you're in right now.
Okay, and I thought that's what you were getting at. Corey, I don't ever want to hear about it.
I try not to share things with you about homeownership because I know that your walls bleed.
I have a waterfall in my house. You're jealous. People would pay a ton of money for that. I bought a house with it.
And also at 9 p.m. on HBO is the special presentation, U2 Innocence and Experience Live in Paris.
God damn, shoving U2 down our throats again. Why? Like Apple HBO?
Do you like U2?
I honestly, what it was is I got sitting there going, okay, I like to do two, maybe three, maybe four things out here. And I'm like, all right, I got two, I need a third. And it was either that or I mentioned the Democratic debate on CBS.
Well, It's just a warning not to watch HBO.
Yeah.
That's true.
10 p.m. on Esquire is the series premiere of Spotless. Getting a text. Night Attack. All right.
Sunday at 11 a.m. We've got on Pivot. I would be able to tell you, but it just jumped around on my mouse. Jamie Superfood, the series premiere of that. Pivot. That, what the hell is Pivot? Did we ever figure that out?
Pivot is the, it's like the same tier that FXX is, but they have the Australian show, the Australian scripted show, Please Like Me. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's Hit Record on TV is on Pivot. It's more left-wing focused, like a spiritual successor to current TV,
okay,
sort of deal. More like, hey, let's do stuff for the environment. Let's, how you can do stuff for the environment and stuff like that. Like making the millennials aware of the world around them, sort of deal.
All right.
But yeah, well,
the exact opposite of that is over on El Rey Network.
Yeah. At 8 p.m. on El Rey is the director's chair with Sylvester Stallone. It's a one-hour special presentation. And then at 10 p.m., a show that the commercials have got me so excited for, AMC's Into the Badlands, the series premiere. And then for the next 3 weeks, AMC's at 11 p.m. or no, yeah, at 11 p.m., AMC's Talking Dead will have a new time slot. And on Monday at 9 p.m. on HBO, you have the special presentation, The Latin Explosion. 10 p.m. euphemism. On. Go ahead.
So that's a euphemism.
Yep.
I had a burrito for lunch. That's pretty much.
I ate Taco Bell. Well, you're going to have a Latin explosion later.
There is nothing Latin about Taco Bell.
Wow. I know.
Wow.
But and then at 10 p.m. On American History or American Heroes channel, you have the one-hour special presentation, Nuremberg Nazi Judgment Day. And then at 10:30, a show I did not know they moved to Mondays. On FX is the first season finale of Gigi Does It, which is a show that I'm behind on but was enjoying while I was watching it and just got busy with work and crap. And on the bubble, not really too much has changed. I can't think what one got, something got added to it, but whatever. No big deal. And that is
officially canceled yet, so
yeah, nothing's canceled, nothing has been like super changed, like, oh, no one's watching this show, so it could be canceled. So Matt, you watch American Horror Story. Have you watched all the American Horror Stories?
We are 2 episodes behind, I believe.
Yeah.
But my wife likes it too, so that helps. But we've seen all seasons up to the current one.
Yeah.
I personally really like it. I shouldn't say that. The first season was really good. The second season was still really good. Third season was probably my favorite. Then the Freak Show one is where things got a little strange. I don't know if anyone else here watches it or anyone. What do you
strange
mean?
Strange Freak Show?
No, it got dumb. Like, yeah. There was things that pissed me off. There was, and it was funny. We actually had a discussion at Band Practice about an episode where a guy got murdered, and, like, he was stabbed, like, 30 times, and his intestines were pulled out and stuff, and he's still talking. And he, like, sits up, and he's like, just kill me. And I'm like, I get it. You're trying to be dramatic, but it's just stop, you know. And at that point, I think, like, my wife and I waited till, I believe we spent our New Year's Eve watching the season up to that point. So we watched like 10 or 11 episodes in a row, and then just kind of finished the season because we had to. Now this season, we're both more into like watching as we go because we watched like 3 episodes at a crack, and it's a little more. It went from zero to insanely fucked up much quicker than every other season. I mean, there's in the first episode a weird monster with a metal pointy dildo raping people in the hotel. And that's like within a half an hour of the first episode, and I was just like, what the fuck? But the story is compelling enough that we keep wanting to go back. Like, it doesn't try and outdo itself from the last episode. And
yeah.
Oddly enough, I think Lady Gaga is actually pretty good in it. And she's got a nice ass. And she is in underwear a lot. That about sums up American Horror Story.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the show has struggled, at least in the last few seasons, more because It's got a pretty extensive cast, and the cast grew a lot from what the first season was to going on and on. It kept adding people, and talented people, like Kathy Bates is in there. But every season, it tries to reinvent itself, and it tries to include all of these people who've been in it along the way. And does it run into problems because it's trying to create new characters for all of these actors at this point? And do they maybe not always add up correctly, or, you know, has the cast grown so big that it's hard to write a storyline involving so many different people?
I don't know. Like, I think he does a good job of reinventing characters that these people fit into. And it also shows that these people are, like, well-rounded actors and actresses. Like, they can play multiple characters all derived from the same storyline, which also shows how good of a writer Ryan Murphy is, a creator, to have five completely separate stories that all still fit together. And yeah, a lot of times you don't know how or why or whatever, but it's that's like some drug-taking type thought stuff. Like, I couldn't sit down and put five different storylines that all somehow work together, even if I tried. Like, that's just a creative human being, and I think that's something else I like. And it's bringing insane horror to cable.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, and we talked about Scream Queens before, and Scream Queens, I think people expected to be more like an actual horror show because of American Horror Story, and because it's called Scream Queens, it just seemed like that's what it was going to, and it went far more in the silly direction.
Yeah.
American Horror Story can get incredibly dark. And I do remember the second season when my wife was watching it and they were it was Asylum. She started seeing the things that connected to the first season, even though that happened later on. And I think that it is one of the things that pulls her back into it, is because they are interconnected in a way. And that's part of the discovery as you're going along, is seeing how these things interrelate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would say for people who are expecting Scream Queens to be, and I haven't seen Scream Queens or any of the American Horror Stories, to be honest, that they were expecting, because Ryan Murphy did, or is the creator on Scream Queens and also is the creator on American Horror Story, and they're expecting it to be like, oh, it's American Horror Story, but for network TV. Keep in mind, he did Glee, which started out as a comedy. Mm-hmm. They lost track of that very quickly.
I think they assumed they were funny.
Well, no, the first two, first season, maybe season and a half, it was funny. Like, they had funny moments, but then it quickly became, let's do an episode about Britney Spears and then about Lady Gaga and not about the plot of the show or any of the humor.
In both of those cases, they were still trying to be humorous. The problem is that they were trying to write the show towards the songs they were using in the episodes.
Yeah.
As opposed to making the songs fit into what the story was about, they went the reverse. I'm going to say Scream Queens is one of my favorite shows right now.
Yeah.
I did not expect to love this program like I do, but the shows that I'm looking forward to watching every week are Fargo and Scream Queens and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Those are the tops of my list. When there are multitudes of superhero shows on TV, these are the things I'm reaching for.
No, yeah, definitely. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend's how you do the musical show with great comedy.
You write the music for the show and make really great songs.
Yes. But yeah, and I was going to throw in the show that I think only lasted a season with The New Normal.
Yep.
That was also another one. So, Matt, me and you have watched the first four episodes of Master of None. This is the new Netflix original show that no one knew about. Yep. That stars, I think it stars, is created by, I think he wrote some of the episodes and directed, I mean, he directed episode four. But it's all that's done by Aziz Ansari.
I love Aziz Ansari. I thought he was really funny in Community. I'm sorry, Parks and Rec. I screwed myself up there. But I thought he was funny. I like Tom Haverford as a character, and I really do enjoy Aziz Ansari's stand-up. I think he's a super funny guy. So yeah, when I heard about this incredibly late, it kind of took me for a loop. Now, I'm going to go back and correct you. Aziz actually directed the second episode.
That's what it was.
It looks like he wrote all of them. But what I really love, the fourth episode is directed by Eric Wareheim, Tim and Eric. I love Tim and Eric. I love Check It Out. Actually just watched the new Tim and Eric Bedtime Stories yesterday. But that was a plus for me because I didn't know that Eric was in it, and then I saw it. And it's not really like laugh your balls off comedy. It's kind of like just normal, everyday, funny shit that happens. And I think that's what I like about it.
Yeah, it reminds me, with you saying that, it reminds me of the Jim Gaffigan show that's on TV Land.
Is that show any good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Because it's very similar in this respect. But I think all the episodes are written by Jim Gaffigan and his wife Jeannie. Okay. And it's one of those things that you have to understand when you're watching this, that like if you know Jim Gaffigan's humor, there's a lot of food jokes. So they make a lot of food jokes in here, but it's everyone doing it at his expense. Like the dude from Stella, Michael Ian Black, he's in there playing Jeannie's sassy gay friend, and all he does is make fat and food jokes towards Jim Gaffigan whenever they have to interact with each other. And it's brilliant.
I saw the ends of a few episodes. I started watching Impastor that was on TV Land. But I never got into it. I'm adding it to my DVR, I know.
No, yeah. Like my problem with the shows has been because I would never catch them live where I do have, or where Comcast does have the HD channel for TV Land, but they don't offer it on demand in HD. And I'm like, come on.
What the hell is this, a third world country?
Yeah, like I got to watch this on my small little 22-inch TV like this. Like,
Comcast, they don't want to waste the bandwidth for a TV Land show. I mean, what is this, Hot in Cleveland? You need to see that in SD. I'm going to ask because I've seen a lot of comparisons. The Aziz Ansari show, it's getting compared to, by people that I've seen, to Seinfeld and also compared to Louie.
I haven't watched either, which...
Same here.
Yeah. Yeah. I never got Seinfeld, and I don't really want to go back and watch Seinfeld.
I could sort of see that because there isn't really, like, from my understanding of Seinfeld, where it was a show about nothing.
Yeah.
There isn't really a overarching theme. Like, he's not a dad who newly discovers he has a son and then and that son has a daughter sort of deal. And, he just happens to be 50 years old and regularly handsome and all that. Oh, wait, I'm describing
that. That would be a very strange part for Aziz to play.
Yeah.
I mean, go against type, sure, but...
Yeah. But, you know, it's not like one of those where, like, the show has, like, this set premise to it. It's just, it's almost like he's writing bits from his life. Especially with the episode that he directed, Parents, where they talk about the fact that his character's parents and his one of his best friend's parents both immigrated from, like, I think China and from
Korea, India.
Yeah, Korea and India. And like I'm sitting there thinking, like, okay, this is something that Aziz took from his life.
Like, and that sounds like a lot of it, like episode 4 that we just both watched, Indians on TV, where they kind of keep typecasting him as an Indian guy, and he goes in for an audition, and they want him to play like a taxi driver, and he does the lines and he just speaks normally, and then they're like, can you do like an accent? And he goes, no, I mean, why would I do that? I'm against doing that. And they're like, oh, never mind. You know, we'll find someone else, essentially. And I feel like that's probably happened to him on more than one occasion prior to becoming a somebody.
No. Yeah. It's a really good show. Because I was watching it while I was doing starts and stops, because that's typically what I do, is, like, watch something that I don't have to 100% focus on, but I will give, like, 50% while I'm sitting here typing out. And it was keeping me enthralled, and I'm sitting there laughing at a lot of the moments. And it wasn't because like I didn't even know that this was out until I looked at it. I'm like, oh hey, Matt watched Master of None. I should probably watch it because I'm sure as hell I'm not gonna watch 90 Day Fiance. No offense,
My wife liked it, so I like it. I also really like Teen Mom, but it's out. Teen Mom's out of season right now. It's kind of like Bananas. There's something special about watching people whose life is much worse than yours. Like I'm now just a normal guy. I go to work. I don't do cool things that often anymore. So it's nice to watch TV and be like, my life could be a hell of a lot worse. At
I
least I'm
feel like
not
that's
that
why
guy.
both of you hang out with me. I feel I'm kind of like shit right now because it sounded a little too close to home.
So you were 16 and had a kid?
I'm not gonna say anything right now.
Do you have a green card marriage? I know I've never met Aaron.
I only saw
So,
Aaron that one time. Well,
yeah.
maybe two times when we did the TV draft, but I don't know where I'm going
You
with that.
can come clean. I know we're on the internet right now, but I feel like this is a good place to do it. Let's get it out in the open real quick.
I don't. I'm not. My lawyer told me that I am not allowed.
Now we hit a sore subject.
Yeah. So speaking of sore subjects, because I'm gonna end Master of None by saying check it out. It's on Netflix.
It's a great show.
Yeah, and it's like even it's weird because here, obviously the Marvel Jessica Jones got a lot of advertisements because oh, Daredevil was such a success, and even with Bob and David got a good amount of advertising because it's Bob Odenkirk and David Cross, you know what I mean, and all that. So like this one, it's like wow, it's one of those that it would have been a big push if this was on any other net on any other streaming service. But I think it just shows how Netflix is. But anyways, speaking of wherever my segue was before, Corey, you saw The Death of Superman Lives.
I did. I was flipping through channels over the weekend, and this was something that was coming up on Showtime. I'm like, really? That's on Showtime? I had no idea. Apparently, Beatmaster's a little pissed because he paid to watch it, and I pay for Showtime. I'm that asshole. And so I was like, sure, I'll record that. I'll check that out and see what it's all about. Now, Superman Lives was famously the movie that Kevin Smith was hired to write the script for, and then I think it was John Peters was the producer of it, who produced the original Superman movies, I think, and produced the Batman film with Tim Burton. And so then Tim Burton gets hired on as director, completely gets rid of Kevin Smith's script, hires on another scriptwriter, and then eventually a third scriptwriter. And it just goes through all of this development and costs a lot of money and is made to be a giant film. Nicolas Cage was supposed to play Superman in it, and we have seen photos of him on the internet in a iteration of the costume. And people are like, oh, holy shit, bullet dodge there. Superman doesn't dodge bullets, he dodges guns. But in all of the mess and everything, what happened is Burton left doing the third Batman movie and went over to do this, but the third and fourth Batman movies came out and were hyper bombs, and so it killed Warner Brothers' belief in doing this movie, so they just shelved it in the end. So it was 3 weeks from going into actual production, and that's when they pulled the plug. I think about $20 million in, you get to see the different tries at the suit. You get to see Nick Cage wearing it and talking about it. You see him with the long, stringy black hair he had at the time, and then you see him with his hair cut. You see him do a take on Clark Kent, sort of, where he's wearing a blazer and a Mickey Mouse shirt. This was going to be a very strange film, but it interviews all the people involved, including a good amount of time with Tim Burton and Kevin and the producer and everybody that was somehow related to the film. In the end, do I think this would have been a good movie? No, but I don't look back too fondly on even the Burton Batman films at this point, because I think that we have, it's like listening to stereo for a long time and then listening to something in 5.1 and then 7.1 and then going back to stereo and going, oh, stereo, shit. This is just a crappy sound. Why can't I listen to stuff where it's coming at me from all angles? It's kind of like that. We've grown too far past what superhero movies were in the 80s and the early 90s, but it still would have been interesting. And I think that's something that I wouldn't have thought before seeing this, is that while I think a lot of the choices that they look like they're going to make were going to be terrible choices in regards to being a Superman movie, first of all, I've seen worse, and you can go back and listen to probably four or five different of episodes of this show where I talk about the Man of Steel. But it would have been at least something original, and what they were trying to do was so far off the wall and involved many things, including Doomsday, Superman dying, Superman coming back to life, fighting Lex Luthor and Brainiac, and them combining into one, Superman's suit being made out of basically a robot that is his bodyguard and friend from Krypton that's meant to keep him alive. This was coming out, was supposed to come out at the time that The Matrix came out. And that's another thing, is that there's comparisons to that, which it would have looked horrible next to. But it's still, it's kind of incredible how much they were really trying to do with this. And all of these things that were at that point in time looked at as, oh, there's no way they're going to be able to do that. You know, Nicolas Cage, what a terrible choice. But then you got to remember that Michael Keaton was considered a terrible choice for Batman until people saw him play Batman. Yeah. Heath Ledger, not too long after, was considered to be a bad choice to play the Joker until you saw him play the Joker. And that's how people react to a lot of superhero stuff now. And this is people saying these things before there was really an internet where they were really ripping into it.
Now, that plot right there, because I've heard of this Superman Lives. That was the plot of it. It was all that stuff you said about, like, you know, fighting Doomsday and then dying and coming back.
Yes.
That's five movies.
It feels like it's a lot. It feels like it would have been a very long film, because you start out fighting one villain and then dying and then slowly coming back. And Kevin Smith was like, I'm writing the script that is my dream script. I don't expect this to get made because someone else is going to come in and have to film it, and they're going to change all this shit anyways. So I'm just going to throw everything in there. So the Eradicator is in there, mm-hmm. and the cyborg Superman is in there. I didn't hear any mentions of Superboy or of Steel. But all of these characters and stuff, there was a cameo of Batman that was supposed to happen. So everything's thrown into this. But even in the end, they were still planning on having key things happen, and the Doomsday fight is how it starts, because that's how Superman has to be killed. There was going to be a point where they were going to show on Brainiac's ship just like the entirety of all the creatures he's gotten from Krypton and different planets that he's collected over time. All of these creatures in there just for a random scene, you know, just for a few minutes of film. The picture that surfaced of Nicolas Cage in the Superman suit was a suit that was only going to be worn for 3 minutes in filming. It wasn't meant to be the actual Superman suit. Rumors of he's not supposed to fly. Rumors of I don't want to see him as Clark Kent. I don't want to see him in the suit. All of those things, Peter says, weren't true, but the fighting against the polar bears, Brainiac's going to go to the Arctic to break into Superman's Fortress of Solitude. So I want him to do something, so he's got to fight some polar bears. That scene was actually supposed to be in it. The giant spider thing, the Thangarian spider creature that he's supposed to fight at some point, that was actually something that Peter's admitted to doing. And then they show later on how he put the spider creature into the Wild Wild West, which is the movie that they went over to after Superman Lives got chick-canned, is they all went over to do Will Smith's Wild Wild West, which bombed. So it kind of, it maybe is a little bit of vindication, or it may just show that these people who were making these movies weren't people to trust with these types of films at that point. Beatmaster is saying that there was supposed to be no cape, but there were definitely capes that were used, and they were doing a lot of extensive tests to find the right kind of cape for the costume. So a lot of this stuff is internet legend, and Kevin Smith has been telling the story about Superman Lives. It's kind of what he built his career on outside of films, is going around to shows and telling stories. I've heard him tell it live years ago, and also talk about when he met Prince.
Yeah.
Funny story, some of the stuff is kind of like backlash of, no, that's not actually true. But he still tells it exactly the same. He believes that this is the things that were said, and he believes that these are the things that happened, and I don't deny him that. But to see it all put into, you know, a documentary that explains it all a little bit better, a little more thoroughly, and gets all of the rumor, conjecture, and FUD out of it, it's much more compelling, and it makes me kind of wish... I mean, Batman and Robin happened. You can't do any worse than what Schumacher did with Batman and Robin. I hope. Oh, Jesus, I hope. So, should this movie have happened... Maybe it should have, because even if it was awful, it couldn't have been that awful.
Yeah.
You know, it couldn't have killed the Batman franchise for 8 years. Superman franchise had already been gone for a long time because of the quest for peace. It and took some time to get to Superman Returns anyways. So it's not really like we would have been any worse off, because we still had to get to a better place with superhero films as it was. We still had to get through things like Steel, and we had to get through getting to the point where we had the Blade movies, but still having the couple Fantastic Four movies. I think it at least would have been something you'd watch with some sort of curiosity. If not a good film or a good Superman movie, it would have been at least something interesting to see. And I'm not a huge Tim Burton fan, but I do appreciate that what his vision was something new.
Yeah.
But like many things, I think that's the whole point, is that if you want to make something new, make something new. Don't steal the name of another property and just attach it to the film that you want to make if it doesn't fit it. You know, don't just say, oh, here's your Fantastic Four movie that has nothing to do with Fantastic Four, or here's your Gem movie that has nothing to do with Gem. Make something that evokes that idea so that people can't bitch about it, that it's not what they thought it was. You know, well, no, it's not supposed to be what you think it is. It's what I think it is. But if it's got a history, especially a long, beloved history like Superman does, then don't make a Superman movie that isn't Superman. Make something that's yours, because there's nothing else to compare it to then.
Yeah. No, that's great. I like hearing that stuff. And so I want to hit real quick, Matt Black Jesus. I know it's an Adult Swim TV show. You wanted to talk about it, so I'm going to let you talk about it.
So this season of Black Jesus is a little different than the first. It actually, and I remember when it first came out, I was intrigued just by the name. I grew up Catholic, went to private schools the whole nine yards, so I'm pretty well versed in Christianity, so I was like, I'm curious what this is. And right before it came out, the Catholic Church gave it a lot of praise. They were like, hey, this is actually really good, because they take like modern ghetto life and put Jesus in it. And like, now this season he started like preaching more, and I guess they're starting to put more real life situations, like they do the Jesus's Church of Compton and Fish Taco Truck. And he drives around Compton and gives sermons and serves fish tacos. And he's talking to this kid about, like, playing football. And he's like, so if someone tries to tackle you, what do you do? And the kid's like, well, I just keep running. And he's like, Jesus is like, why don't you turn around and get him? And the kid was like, but I want to score. And Jesus is like, that's because it's revenge. And I was like, all right, cool. Giving kids lessons. And then at the end, the kid, like, gives Jesus his gun. And he goes, oh, I really thought about it. And I was kind of like, eh, I get it. I get what you're trying to do. But the overall comedy is actually really funny, because it takes a lighthearted approach to religion.
Yeah.
So and from like a moral standpoint, I think it's fine. It's the right approach for today's society to give like ethical baselines to religious beliefs, and just be really funny. It's really funny when you see Jesus smoke weed and say shit and talk about like robbing churches and stuff. I think it's funny.
I think that's what religion these days is, though, is that people are looking for a way to still connect to religion, and it's better when it's not something that's trying to shame you or trying to disclude you by saying that you're not pious enough or good enough or anything. That's why people are connecting to the new Pope, like he's a flavor of Coca-Cola from the 80s, is that he seems like he's a more approachable guy, and he seems like a more inclusive guy than what they've connected to with the Pope from the last, well, certainly Benedict, and even John Paul, who was like my Pope growing up, was, you know, a mouthpiece for the Catholic Church. And every Pope is going to be a mouthpiece for the Catholic Church. But you can, if you get the right person in there, they can tailor it a little bit more to say, well, we're more inclusive. We are trying to involve people more and say it's okay to be who you are, as opposed to, no, you're just going to burn in hell, sinner.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. It's all in the approach. And I think the approach of this show, now it's an Adult Swim show, so there's like 47 people that watch it, but the approach is there. And I think, yeah, I like it. I don't want to get all religious-y on it and be like, oh, I think they're doing this and this is great because it's teaching kids and shit, but it's good. It's good. Yeah. If you're into like bad Adult Swim type comedy, I would suggest at least a few episodes. I think it's a half an hour, which is weird for Adult Swim, but the seasons are pretty short.
Yeah, because usually they do
15 minutes.
Yeah, it's usually 15.
Yeah, and something has to balance out Moral Oral, which I think is just one of the worst shows that Adult Swim has ever done. I keep trying to watch a show and it's just terrible.
I got into Black Jesus and Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell at the same time.
Yeah.
So I feel like
that's a good pairing.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, the titles for the shows are the things I like the most about Adult Swim. Like, I will occasionally watch Robot Chicken. If they're doing, like, some special thing, I'll definitely watch that Robot Chicken. But then it's like, I don't really watch too much Adult Swim outside of that. And, like, I used to watch it a lot, but it was mainly also skewed more towards the animes.
Yeah.
But now it's quickly become, let's air all the Fox shows. Like, let's air, you know, like Cleveland Show and Family Guy and all that stuff. I'm like, all right, cool. Yeah, I've already seen it. But no, yeah, I definitely think I'll check out Black Jesus.
I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you to Rick catch and Morty up on Venture Brothers before the new season starts.
Oh, yeah, Venture Brothers. Dude, I'm way too behind on Venture Brothers to catch up before the season starts.
Their seasons are so short, and they're so amazing.
No, you sound a little bit like Brian Urbaniak when you said that, too.
I wish.
No, in my head, it was like you had the tempo that he uses for, I'm blanking on the dude's name. For
Dr. his character. Venture.
Yeah, Dr. Venture.
One day I will do the entire rant of the Monarch and Dr. Girlfriend when they're talking about the lead singer of Depeche Mode.
Speaking of Adult Swim shows, I want to make sure that Beat's point gets out here. That Metalocalypse used to be on Adult Swim. I love that show because I also love death metal. But there's a change.org petition to bring it back.
It all goes full circle.
Yep. I had to get that in there. And they even had people sending stuff to Hulu headquarters.
Gregor, yeah. It's full pentagram when it comes to Metalocalypse.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, Black Jesus.
Oh, Black Jesus. Nicely played.
But no, honestly, Metalocalypse, I watched a little bit because it has the same creator as Home Movies.
Yes.
Oh. I actually saw Death Clock and Mastodon once live.
Oh, nice.
And that was actually really cool because of how, I mean, A, Gene Hoglan played drums. Gene Hoglan was in Death. Death is, you know, one of those bands that if you're into death metal, but they had the whole stage was black and there was just a huge video board behind them and they just played videos from the show and stuff while real dudes played the songs.
That's cool.
Yeah, is it kind of like going to see the Gorillaz?
Yeah, but not sucky music.
Well, that's
all right, so I want to wrap things up by talking about a show that I know I watched. I don't know if Corey's watched it, but and actually I can compare the East and West Coast feeds. That's Undateable. They've been doing all this season live. I think it's boosted their ratings quite a bit. And this is a show that works really well live. I wasn't expecting it to be like that. Like, because when they did the one live show, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And then, like, it was fun, but, like, maybe you see it once every once in a while, maybe once a season or whatever. And they're like, oh, the next season, all live. I'm like, okay, it's going to be interesting.
I'm gonna argue and say that the show only works live.
No, yeah.
Because I tried watching the first season, and it was not good, and I tuned out. But when the live stuff started happening, I've been into the season, too. And even when it's not necessarily funny, it's just impressive watching them go.
And the thing is, though, is I laugh more at the East Coast feed, but that's just because I watched the past. Hulu has put the past two episodes, both East and West Coast feeds, up at the same time. So I actually watched East then West. And the puppet episode, this past episode where they had the puppets for the proposal and all that stuff, I was laughing so hard every time Ron Funches was talking. And I'm like, stop it! Stop being so freaking adorable, you big burly black man. I love the show so much, and I want to see them come back and do more live stuff. It's really cool how they had, like, the Halloween episode where they had basically Chris D'Elia was in there with his shirt off because he was like that. I love the digs. I don't know if you watch if you're able to get the East Coast feed that they do, but they will make fun of they made fun of Chris D'Elia numerous times, like saying Martha Stewart was funnier than him, or there was another one of like that he's not as good looking as he thinks he is, and stuff like that. It's much like how this past episode they had the plug for Brent Morin's Netflix special.
Yes, and also how they went after Chris with the water bottles. And he seemed kind of stunned, surprised by it.
Yeah, because that was only West Coast.
Right.
And it's just, it's cool. I love the improv. I think Chris D'Elia brings, or is the one who holds the improv really good together. Like, he holds that whole thing making it live. The other actors are good, but it's, you could tell Chris D'Elia was one of the people who really got behind this. Once they're like, oh, we're going to do it all live. And
I think it also shows the relationship of the actors and how well they play off of each other, because they do those little digs and they roll with each other really well. And that's impressive. And I think that's something that only can happen if you've worked together for a few seasons.
Yeah.
And build good relationships. And when you see a bunch of them play together at midnight, and how well they do in that.
Which
as well.
Is one of the things I'm surprised you haven't seen happen yet, is them going, well, hey, at least I'm the, or like, Ron Funch is going, well, at least I'm undefeated on it. Well, no, he's not undefeated anymore. Damn it. Like, at least I'm the most winningest person on At Midnight, or something like that, you know? Like, that's something I want to see. Like, I keep waiting for, like, okay, let's bring something in with At Midnight here. But no, this show is really funny. I find myself every time just laughing nonstop throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's one that a lot of people aren't checking out that need to check it out. Like, and honestly, I just say you don't even need to see the first season. You could possibly see the second season, if not just to get to that live episode, and then just start watching season three with all the live stuff.
There's nothing that really connects it to the earlier seasons. It's just them hanging out in a bar, and that's mostly it. And it's, you either like the people in the show or you don't. That's really it.
And the kid that they bring in for the credits every time is so creepy. Because he has that perfect I'm evil face that he does. And it's just like, God, whose kid is that?
Satan's.
Yeah. But that just about wraps it up here for us. A big thank you to Matt for coming in, and Corey for taking a break from NaNoWriMo.
Bananarama.
Matt, let everyone know how they can get a hold of you, what all the shows are that you do, all that stuff.
Like mentioned, we do the podcast Terror, Corey and I. This episode seems to be coming out on Tuesdays. We're weekly. I think Dave put those out on Fridays or Saturdays. I just show up once in a while and I talk. And then the Sci-Fi Geeks Club when I have time and I'm not playing sports ball. If you really want... Oh, I play soccer. Corey, not Corey. What's his nuts? What's the other guy? What's the other guy on Sci-Fi Geeks Club? Brad.
Brad.
Sorry, Brad.
Other Wisconsin.
Well, back in my day, my nuts were talked about.
Shit, what was I going to say about Brad? Oh, Brad always calls me playing soccer sports ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess if you want to find me on the internet, I use the Twitter and Instagram. I'm just at Matt the Lifeguard. So that no one has to ask. I play in a band called Drown the Lifeguard. That's where it came from. I'm not really a lifeguard. I can barely swim.
This means you're that lifeguard who stood in the chair and all the time just worked on his tan.
Pretty much. We actually have a buddy of ours is our lifeguard, so I got to get him nose zinc, and I'm going to try and make a can koozie out of a lifeguard thing.
Nice.
So we can just drink while we play. But, yeah, thank you for having me. It was quite a lot of fun because I love TV. Now, yeah. We need to do this again during Teen Mom season, though.
Okay. I say this every time when we get done with the Sci-Fi Geek Club, and I like before doing this whole month, but you're welcome back anytime. Like, you just got to say, hey, I want to come on. I'm like, all right, I'll send you an invite.
I'll keep that in mind. Thank you very much. I appreciate the offer.
Yeah, but and you can find all that stuff, all of his podcast stuff, over at gncast.com. That's gncast.com. And you can find us over at elsnerds.com. We're working on combining the two to make it easier. You can like our Facebook group, facebook.elsnerds.com. You can send us mail@elsnerds.com. You can watch us on YouTube at watch.elsnerds.com. Follow us on Twitter. Corey is at Captain Merity. I'm at That Gregor, and we are together along with our co-hosts Evan and Beat. We are at Elsnerds, and we record What Else Is On every Monday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Western. Figure it out for the rest of the areas. It's just math. And real quick, for programming out for our next week's guest, it's going to change all the stuff. Everything's going to change. Actually, I think the next 2 weeks might change, to be honest. I'm working on stuff for the week after as well. But Daryl Johnson is his last name, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, Daryl Johnson, the host of Galactic Netcast's Who News and Reviews. He's going to be joining me, and I'm going to do – it's basically going to be Pod Save the Queen, the resurrection of Pod Save the Queen, but with a British person.
Live Brit?
Yes, exactly. They exist.
So you're going to serve the show warm.
Yeah. And
with a lot of breadcrumbs.
And with beans. And with beans and for breakfast. Yeah, we're going to have to do a full English breakfast, all that stuff.
Better up before you get on there.
But no, so that's next week. Stay tuned for that. I'll be posting about all that goodness. And yeah, the only thing that's left to say is this has been a Don't Tell Glenn production. We will see you guys next time.
Take care, everybody.